Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
So I'm Kathy Gordon, and Summer Sheldon is also going to be leading this call with me. So we have about 5 minutes before the call starts. How's my sound, everybody? Can everybody, am I clear?
Sure. A little bit.
Just a little bit clear. Is that better if I?
Yeah, yes. That's better.
Bring the microphone right under my chin.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, better? Great.
Maybe
turn up the, I bet the volume on my phone's probably all the way down. How's that? Is that better?
Yeah.
That
sounds good.
Great. All right. So we have a few minutes before we start, so love to hear from people maybe the ages of your kids and we have time, we're going to have time at the end for question and answers, but just maybe one thing you're looking to get out of the call today or one thing that's going well. We always like to start with something going well and hand in hand. A lot of the times we're talking about hard stuff. Challenges, and so we like to start with something going well to remind us of that life is good. So, anybody want to?
I'm Ana Maria, and I can share something good.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you, everybody? I live in California, and I have a 6 and a half boy, Alexander, and a 3 and a half girl, Sabrina. I'm taking a course for establishing limits and boundaries.
Uh-huh.
And I've been trying to apply this day listening, especially with Sabrina, because it's been hard for her to go to school. She refuses to go. And I've been trying, I think not 2 weeks, but I've been trying for 3 weeks, the first module. And it's been working this week. It's been developing on changes progressively, and I'm very happy.
Great.
She used to have a very hard time to leave the house, to get into the car. She would refuse to dress, eat, put her shoes, et cetera. In the school.
Great. Hopefully, I think we'll have some good thoughts for you today. And anybody else like to share something going well and tell us the ages of your kids? We're going to start here in about 2 minutes. But, Summer, you want to share something going well? Summer's an instructor candidate, and she's going to be presenting this call with me today. So, Summer, how about something going well for you?
Yes. Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming. Is my sound okay?
Yes. Great.
Okay. Great. My husband took my kids to their first dentist appointment, my 3-year-old. So I managed to shirk that duty. So he's not usually the appointment taker. And so today he had to load up all 3 kids and take them to their dentist appointment. And I'm pretty happy about that. And they're all excited about it. So I think it's going to be great.
Great. Wonderful.
And my kids, I'll tell them my kids are later.
Yeah. Great. Anyone else like to share something going well before we get started here, and tell us the ages of your kids?
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
I was just trying to figure out whether you're talking to each other or whether you're talking to people in the conference.
The call is going to start. The actual call itself is going to start in 1 minute.
Yes.
So we're just kind of getting to, chatting with people a little bit.
Oh.
But it actually is 10 o'clock. So We are going to get started. I'm going to mute everyone by putting everyone in lecture mode for the first part of the presentation, and then we'll leave time towards the end of the call to answer some questions. At that time, you can press star 2, and that raises your hand and lets you know that that you have a question. So I'm going to put everybody here in lecture mode. So everyone is muted. That's interesting. Okay. And then since this call is being recorded, I'm going to pause for just a minute to help with the editing with the recording. So welcome, everyone, to our teleseminar today, which is called From Toddlers to Teens, What to Do When Your Child Lashes Out. My name is Kathy Gordon. I'm a certified instructor of Parenting by Connection with Hand-in-Hand Parenting. And I'm here with Summer Sheldon, who's one of our esteemed instructor certification candidates. We have a lot of people who've registered for the call, and so before we get to the meat of the teleseminar, Summer's going to talk a bit about hand-in-hand parenting while we let people get on the call and settle in. So, Summer, take it away.
Awesome. Hand-in-hand parenting is a nonprofit organization. It was founded by Patty Whistler in 1989, and until 2005, it was known as the Parent Leadership Institute. Our mission is to make parenting life be what you want it to be, to give you tools and the support you need to bring you closer to your child. Our parenting approach is called Parenting by Connection, and it is an approach that really focuses our minds and our efforts on creating and maintaining and repairing a really good connection with our children. This approach is really different from most of what's out there. So what we find works best is actually connecting with children, a child's sense of safety, which allows them to learn and thrive, depends on feeling connected to us. So we offer 5 basic listening tools for promoting parent-child connection and for promoting good support for parents so that we can think well and we can be there for our children. We have 4 parent-to-child listening tools. We have special time, stay listening, play listening, and setting limits. And then we have a very, very powerful parent-to-parent listening tool, and that's called Listening Partnerships. So in addition to the regular free teleseminars like this one that we do, we offer many other ways you can learn and then practice this approach. In fact, we are very excited to announce that on August 23rd, we are releasing our book, which is entitled Listen, 5 Simple Tools to Meet Everyday Parenting Challenges, and it's co-authored by our founder, Patty Whistler, and our senior instructor, Tasha Shore. This book is going to be such a wonderful resource for parents like you and me and everybody else, as each of the 5 listening tools will be explained, and then it's accompanied by, a lot of anecdotes and success stories, and it will really help you implement the tools in the book. So we also offer ways to connect with instructors and other parents in order to get the support that you need. Our foundational parenting tool class is called the Parenting by Connection Starter Class. When you take the starter class, you get 6 months access to all the instructional videos, and you'll also be a part of a 6-week mentoring and support call while you're learning and practicing the tools, which is really amazing to be a part of that call. We also have a parent intensive course, which is a 10-week course, and it's designed for parents who may be facing some really big challenges, and then therefore they might need a little bit more ongoing support. If you like to access our material at your own pace, we have self-guided video classes, and we also have a new membership program, which is really cool, called the Hand-in-Hand Parenting Club. And when you become a member of the club, every Monday, a short instructional video shows up in your inbox, and then along with some real-life anecdotes, and it helps you to break down your toughest parenting challenges with step-by-step solutions. You'll also get live coaching calls every month with instructors like Kathy. And the information about all of our resources, along with a schedule of classes, can be found on our website at www.handinhandparenting.org.
Great. Great. Thank you so much for that overview of Hand in Hand Summer. I see we have a good number of people joining us today. So we want to go ahead and get started with kind of the meat of our teleseminar. And first of all, Summer and I want to welcome you and thank you for being here. We know how tough it can be to arrange your schedule and childcare to commit to this hour. And whether you're with us live right now or listening to the recording, we really appreciate what it took for you to be here. We appreciate your commitment to your family, and we hope that you'll come away from this call feeling a little uplifted with some ideas and resources to make life go better for you and yours. So we're going to start by introducing ourselves. Then we'll talk about why children lash out and what's driving that behavior. Then we'll give you a couple of specific tools to use for those tough times. And Summer is going to share her experience using these tools with her own three children, and then we're going to have a good chunk of time to answer some of your questions. So I'm the single adoptive mom of a 12-year-old boy who was born in Los Angeles, where we currently live. He was placed with me when he was 10 days old, but I didn't discover the hand-in-hand approach until my son was about 5. I've been practicing nonviolent parenting, which is a style of unconditional empathetic parenting, but we were still struggling a lot with tantrums and aggression, especially around bedtime. But then I won a consultation with our founder, Patty Whiffler, and that hour with Patty, it changed our bedtime, my relationship with my son, and really our lives. And I've been a teacher of one thing or another all my adult life, so when these tools made such a difference in my own little family, it was only natural that I'd want to share these tools with others, and so I became an instructor. So, Summer, thank you so much for being on this call with me today. It's really such an honor and a pleasure, and we'd love to hear about you and your family.
Okay, well, so I'd like to thank Kathy for the chance to be on this call and for all of you who have called in to listen and to participate. So I'm a stay-at-home mom of three. I have two boys who are 6 and 8 years old, and then I have a very spicy little girl who's 3. I'm a reader and a researcher at heart. So when I became a mom 8 years ago, I read every book that I could get my hands on about parenting and child-rearing. And I was a fan of attachment parenting, and all was pretty well until my son turned 3, and we entered what felt like a veritable wasteland of parenting strategies. I researched, and I tried everything from love and logic to dare to discipline, and nothing was working. Embarrassing as it sounds, I was so desperate at one point that I was actually watching episodes of 19 Kids and Counting solely for the purpose of trying to, like, glean parenting information off of them, thinking they had 19 kids and they were all still alive and they hadn't killed them, so they must know something that I don't know. I felt always, like, locked in power struggles from, like, morning until night with my kids, and I just was not enjoying them. I felt constantly triggered, and I felt reactionary, and like I was on the brink of losing it all day long. Even though I had initially sworn not to spank my children, like I had been spanked, I ended up desperate enough to even try that. It wasn't until I attended a parenting conference in Seattle where I stumbled into a workshop that was led by Patty when I found what I had been so painstakingly looking for. Not only did her philosophy of parenting make more sense to me than anything else I had come across, but she had two things that no one else had. She had science to back up her theories and tools, which were easy and practical, and that worked. So I talked my husband into giving the parenting by connection approach a 2-week trial, and by day 3, our whole family was, like, sold, and we've never looked back. So after taking the starter class, both my husband and I took the starter class, I was looking for instructors in my area in Oregon, and realized that there weren't any. And so I began the process of becoming an instructor myself.
Yeah, yeah. And we are so looking forward to you finishing that and becoming a full-fledged instructor. Some of the parents in Oregon and around the world will be very, very fortunate to have your wisdom and have you as an instructor. So, we're really looking forward to hearing your stories about using the tools when your little ones lashed out both at you and each other. So we wanted to start by talking about why kids lash out. And hand in hand, we stand by the belief that your child is good. you are good and your child is good. So what's driving or causing this aggressive off-track behavior? Well, what's helpful is to understand a little bit about how our brains work. And I'm going to give you an oversimplified explanation of the brain. In fact, I'm really only going to talk about the vertical brain from bottom to top. So at the bottom is our brain stem, and that's our alarm center. That's the part that puts us into fight-flight mode when we sense that we're in really big danger. Around the middle part of the brain is our emotional processing center, our limbic system. And that's the part of the brain that processes memory, not just factual memory, but also sensory and feeling memories. They get stored in this part of the brain, which is why we like to call this section our emotional backpack. Then the top part is our higher reasoning center, our cortex. And you'll hear people most often talk about the prefrontal cortex because that's where we do most of our thinking and our reasoning, our creativity, our problem solving. So what we know from all the brain research is that in order for human beings of any age, any and all ages, to think well, in other words, to be able to access and use our prefrontal cortex to make choices, to reason, our brain has to be integrated, and we need to feel safe and connected. Yeah, that's so important when we're talking about kids that are lashing out. I'm going to say it again. In order for humans to be able to think well, to be able to access the thinking part of their brain, they need to feel safe and connected. And what we know about tough times or big transitions such as traumatic births, early medical intervention, adoption, separation, divorce, death, moving, even being replaced by a new sibling, these painful or scary experiences go into our limbic system, that emotional and memory processing center. And if those experiences happen when we're very small, the emotional component, the fear, can get stuck or frozen there, and it can affect our whole nervous system. We all have a kind of a thermostat, if you will, that determines how much stress we can take before our whole body and brain kicks into fight flight. For some of us, many of our children, those early experiences set that thermostat very low. It doesn't take much to kick the heat on or kick up that fear. Dr. Dan Siegel, the author of Parenting from the Inside Out and Whole Brain Child, says that when that early experience or early fear gets re-stimulated, our whole body, our brain, and our nervous system responds as if we were back in that scary moment. But it's like we don't even realize that it's kind of a memory or sort of a flashback. That's why we say, at Hand in Hand, we say that an aggressive child is a scared child. Now, we might not even know what that fear is, but because we know how the brain works, and because we know, you know this feeling yourself, you get cut off in traffic, and you respond with anger. But first, you actually felt afraid, and then you lashed out. You felt hot. Well, the same thing happens with our kids. So, the first thing we want to suggest is that you see their lashing out as a cry for help. It's not conscious or calculated or even manipulative. It really is a signal for help, the same way our oil light goes on when our car needs servicing. But then why do they most often seem to turn on us if it's a cry for help? I think a great analogy is what happens when someone is drowning and you reach for them. In that state of panic, that drowning person might fight the person trying to save them and even pull them under. So even if it doesn't look like it, our child's nervous system is in this state of panic. Their internal experience is one of, now these are not conscious thoughts, but it's just what's happening in their nervous system, this sense of, I'm all alone. I don't know if I'm going to make it. This may never end. That's what's happening in that's their internal experience on kind of a sensory level, not a conscious thought level. So we know it's asking a lot of you to shift your perspective to see from shift your perspective from seeing them as angry, defiant, and impossible to seeing them as scared, isolated, and hurting. We're going to talk in a minute about how you can get the support so you can make that shift. But first, we want to give you two tools that can help you help them. The first tool we've nicknamed our connection vitamin. It's actually called special time. Now, special time is a finite amount of time, maybe 5 minutes, 7 minutes, or 20, during which I give my child my undivided attention. No multitasking, no answering the phone, not even picking up that towel over there on the floor that's screaming to be picked up. In special time, our child gets to do whatever they want to do within safety, time, or financial constraints. I follow their lead, playing what they want to play, taking the less powerful role and delighting in them, pouring in my love and connection. Now, the length of time is less important than the quality of the time and the quality of my attention. And the activity is not important as long as I'm taking the less powerful role and delighting in whatever they choose to do. Oh, and they get to name it so that they can ask for it when they start to feel disconnected. So special time does a couple of things. It fills our child's connection cup. And remember I said in order for children to think well and make those good choices, they need to feel safe and connected. So when we do special time and give our child that undivided attention, we're creating emotional safety as we fill their connection cup. When we deepen their sense of safety, they can begin to trust that that we are there for them. And this can actually help reset their nervous system a little bit. Special time is also good for us. When we delight in our child, we're really seeing them as good. So when they do lash out, we can remember, oh, yes, you are good. You're having a tough time, and you are good. With a scared, aggressive child, it's really important to ramp up the amount of special time they receive. Like every day or maybe a couple times a day in, you know, small doses. Because just like during a cold or flu season, you might give a child more vitamins, make sure they get more sleep, do things to boost their immune system. So with a scared, aggressive child whose nervous system might make them feel disconnected more of the time, we give them as much special time as is possible. And that's why we call special time a connection vitamin. Summer, I know special time's made a huge difference in your family, and we would love to hear about that.
Great. So I have found that special time is the number one way to draw my kiddo who's off track back into connection with me. Once I realized that off-track behavior was a way that my child was signaling for help, it became my number one tool to deal with off-track behaviors like aggression. So my son Everett, who's 6 now, is a more physical kid in general. He's a great snuggler. He's a kinesthetic learner. He connects through physical play like wrestling. And so when he's upset, it also comes out physically. He's the kind of kid that will both lash out angrily, and then he will also just kind of do mean physical stuff when he's upset. So a few months ago, Everett woke up crying, and he said he'd had a bad dream, and I comforted him, and he eventually fell back asleep. And the next morning, he was just off. He was rigid and demanding and just irritable, and as the day went on, he started to become violent. He was picking fights with his brother, like he threw a piece of chain at his head, and he was being physically aggressive with his sister for no reason. I remember she was cowering quietly on the floor, and he, like, walked by and, like, stepped on her fingers on purpose. So now I know this is not who he really is. Like, I know that he loves his brother and his sister very much, and so I knew that something just really must be upsetting him. So I asked, hey, buddy, do you want to have some special time? And after I put his sister down for a nap and I put his older brother involved in something, we went into his bedroom and we closed the door and I set a timer and I asked him what he wanted to do. So it wasn't even literally, it wasn't even 3 minutes into special time as we were playing catch that he burst into tears and started saying, Mommy, I don't want you to die. And he ran into my arms and he hugged me and he told me that his scary dream had been about me dying and that he was worried that I would die and that he would miss my kisses and talk about melting my heart. So we talked for a while and he sat in my lap and he cried. And then he got up and he asked the blade to play Baby Puppy, which is another one of our favorite games. And then when the timer went off, I gave him a piggyback ride back out to the living room. And he ran up to his brother and asked if they could make paper airplanes together. And he was great for the rest of the day. And in fact, he kept sidling up beside me and kissing my arm while I was making dinner. And I think the most amazing part is that he will ask for special time when he's feeling off track. So now I can see him use special time as a tool that when he's beginning to feel off track, he'll come to me, and instead of lashing out at his brother, he will say, Mommy, can I have some special time? And that, it just takes 5 minutes, and it just kind of reconnects him, and we just go in the other room, and he comes back out, and he's just feeling that sense of connection and safety, and it keeps him from lashing out at his brothers or sister.
Wow. Thank you so much, Summer. That is such a great example of how we can offer special time in the moment when we see that our child is off track and hurting. I've also had great success using special time preventatively. When my son was about 4, he started having a really tough time at preschool. He was only going a half a day, but I had increased the number of days from 2.5 days a week to every day. And my sense was he was feeling scared being away from me that much, so I started doing 10 minutes of special time every morning before preschool. And he'd always ask for wrestling. I think he really needed to feel me and have that skin-to-skin contact. After a few days of special time every morning, he started having much better days at preschool. He wasn't kind of whirling out of control or lashing out. You know, he was able to have a good time and be engaged and play the whole half day. And I've also used special time to help with transitions. My son would have a really hard time with the end of play dates, often picking a fight with his friends. So I started offering a few minutes of that yummy connection. And then it was so much easier to move through the end of the play date. Now, even with a lot of special time, our child may still lash out. It's because we have this natural drive to get that fear up and out of our limbic system, to empty our emotional backpack in order to heal. So when you start to do lots of special time, you're increasing the emotional safety. It's as if your limbic system is saying to their limbic system, I'm right here. Tell me all about it. And that's actually what happened when Summer offered her son special time. He started to cry, and the real reason for his aggressive behavior came out. So when you're offering this wonderful emotional safety, it may look a little worse before it starts to get better. And it will get better. But we also have another listening tool that's really great to use in the moment. We found that one of the most effective ways to reach for your angry, scared child is by being playful. Now, that might sound counterintuitive to be playful when your child is lashing out. It might seem like you're rewarding the bad behavior. But if we go back to the analogy of someone drowning, they're thrashing around in the water, trying to stay afloat, trying the best they can to signal for help. When we connect playfully, it's like we're offering safety. We're letting our child know that we're here and that they are safe. Now, there's a lot of emphasis these days on teaching children to self-regulate. The truth is that human beings naturally look to co-regulate. You know yourself, when you're upset, you know, we most often turn to a friend or a partner so we can vent, and then they can tell us, oh, you know, yes, you're right, and you are good. So when we connect playfully with our children, we're anchoring them in our warm attention. We can also playfully set a limit. We can play with their off-track behavior. So if they lash out with harsh words, we can offer to kiss those crabbies away. Or if they lash out physically, we can connect with a vigorous snuggle, which stops the nutty behavior, helps them stop their body, and helps them to feel us, that skin-to-skin contact. The best way to connect playfully is to take the less powerful role, be silly or clumsy, and listen for what brings laughter. Laughter naturally connects us. And when your child is laughing, they're offloading a chunk of that fear that's stuck in their nervous system. This combination of playing with their off-track behavior, setting a limit or expectation playfully, taking the less powerful role, and listening for the laughter is what we call play listening. Play listening helps our child reconnect, helps them co-regulate, helps them offload fear through the laughter, and it's really good for us. Because when we're taking that less powerful role and we're silly or goofy, then we feel lighter and we can avoid those frustrating power struggles. Summer, with three kids, I'm guessing you use play listening a lot. So how does this tool work for you?
Yes, we use play listening a lot. So my middle son, Everett, again, he is your more typical little boy with lots of energy and very little self-regulation. My older son tends to be more of a thinker, and he tends to keep things in. So my younger son tends to be the one that is a more sort of aggressive child. Our family joke is that everywhere we go, that Everett is either yards and yards and yards ahead of us or yards and yards behind us, and he's never with us because he's just always running. He also has severe food and environmental allergies that make him uncomfortable at times, and he also has had some medical issues that have been psychologically traumatic for him. He's impulsive by nature, and so around age three, after undergoing a frightening medical procedure, he began biting multiple times a day and like hard, like draw blood hard. Most of the time it was a reaction to something, like his brother was taking a toy or I was trying to buckle up the car seat, or but sometimes he would just completely bite like unprovoked. It became so bad that his brother began to be afraid of him and would refuse to be left in the same room with him. I was still just learning the parenting by connection approach at this time, and so I wasn't very practiced in the tools yet, and so unfortunately, I tried everything else first. I tried yelling, I tried timeouts and putting him in his room, I tried taking toys away, and nothing was working at all. So after about 2 weeks, we were all pretty chewed up, and we were all really miserable. And so I actually happened to listen in on a teleseminar call, just like this one. But Patty was talking about the vigorous snuggle, which is a way to move in playfully to connect with an off-track child in order to reconnect. So I struck upon the idea of giving Everett kisses whenever he bit. I was actually quite doubtful it would work. I feared that it would reinforce the behavior and make him bite more. But I was out of ideas. I had tried everything else, and I was desperate. So I made an announcement that any little boy who bit was going to get 10,000 kisses. And it wasn't too long until there was a fight, and Everett bit his brother. And I took a deep breath, and I said, uh-oh, I think I see a little boy who bit. Little boys who bite get 10,000 kisses. And I swooped in, and I started kissing him, and then I let him get away, and then I chased him around, and we both collapsed into a pile of giggles. And the results were amazing. Like, seriously, within 3 days, like really more like two, I think he literally bit one time on the third day, he was completely done biting. And he had been biting, like, 20 times a day. And the real miracle was the way that had restored the relationship between my sons. In fact, whenever Everett would bite him, instead of running away screaming, and North would just end up calling to me and say, Mommy, Everett needs some kisses. And it was just such amazing transformation because North was reaching to help Everett, which was just amazing that North could actually see his brother's off-track behavior as something that he had compassion for. So we paired the 10,000 kisses game over to other off-track behaviors, and it worked like a charm to keep kids at their seats at the dinner table or to pick them up off the floor when they're whining. And, in fact, now all I have to do if I hear some squabbling or something starting is I just call from the other room and say, does anybody need any kisses? And they know that I'm right there and I'm ready to connect.
Wow. That is just fantastic, Summer. Well done. So here's a big question. How did you get to the place where you could reach for him and be playful with him, especially when he was hurting his brother and sister?
Well, so I had been using Parenting by Connection for over a year, and everything was going really well. I could lovingly listen to tantrums, and I could use a bigger snuggle to get cranky kids into bed, and I was really, really just enjoying being with my kids for the first time. Except I would continuously find myself just losing it over and over again whenever my kids were violent with each other. I would feel this incredible amount of rage. I would start yelling, and I would have the hardest time controlling myself if one of them just, like, walked by and smacked the other one. I remember one time when my oldest, who was pretty young at the time, shoved my middle son down, and I said, "How would you like to be shoved?" And he just innocently said, "I think I'd like it." And I was so angry that I shoved him with both hands really hard, and I felt so, so bad, and I realized I was clearly not in control of myself or parenting the way that I wanted to. Now, after taking the starter class, I had developed a few listening partnerships, which was amazing, so I began to really focus my listening time and my listening partnerships around my children's aggression towards each other.
Yeah, listening partnerships. That's what we call our parent-to-parent support tool. It's a very simple yet powerful tool. A listening partnership is an exchange of help between two parents. I listen to a parent for a set period of time, and then they listen to me. And we've agreed beforehand to listen without interrupting, giving advice, or fixing. In fact, when my partner listens to me and I listen to them, we listen with warm attention, and we hold the thought. I'm holding this thought about my partner. You're good, and you will figure this out. And that's similar to the kind of warm, undivided attention we give our children, and it allows the person sharing to unload their own emotional backpack, to unload their own fears or resentments or even old childhood hurts.
Yes. And as my partner was listening to me with that warm attention, what came out, besides the usual annoyance that my kids were fighting, was that I had all this pent-up anger towards my siblings around what had happened to me as a child. I had never really even thought of it before, but in my family growing up, sibling violence was basically completely permitted. Since my parents used spanking and physical force to solve conflicts with me, we used it on each other as well. And my parents were fine with that. I had two brothers growing up, and I never really realized how much hurt I still carried from when we were kids and my brothers would beat me up. My parents would say that I deserved it because I was annoying them or other things like that. Anyway, after having numerous listening sessions with my wonderful listening partners, where I would rage and scream and just cry out all that hurt that I had felt toward my siblings growing up, guess what? My rage towards my children just dissolved. I was able to see them as two people who I loved and who were having a conflict and who I wanted to help. When they were fighting, I felt like I could be present and calm and offer my empathy and understanding. The way I had been before was just so unhelpful because I had so much of my own garbage there that I wasn't able to help problem solve with them or be a part of the solution. I realized that it would have been like my husband and I going to a marriage counselor. We're fighting and we're upset, and then having the counselor be angry and upset at us for fighting. So since that time, several years ago, our family has literally been transformed. There is very little sibling fighting amongst my kiddos, and I homeschool, so there's plenty of opportunity. So when conflicts do come up, I feel like they can trust me to be a part of the solution, and they are able to come to me for help if they need it, but they have gotten really, really good at offering empathy to each other and working things out. It's really, really remarkable and would not have been possible if I wouldn't have had been for my amazing listening partnerships.
Summer, thank you so much for that wonderful example of how you unloaded your own emotional backpack so that you could be present, patient, and even playful when your kiddos were lashing out. You mentioned that you learned to do listening partnerships and even found listening partners in the starter class. So both Summer and I think that being in a community, like the one you'll find, the small group you find in the 6-week starter class or the 10-week parent intensive, is really the optimal way to get the kind of support that we all need in order to reach for our scared, angry child. I know for myself, when I was in my starter class and then when I went through the certification program where I had a weekly support call in that year-long
you know, it was so much easier to be patient, and that taught me that I always do need that kind of listening partnership or group support in order to always be clearing my thinking so that I can be there for my son. And we'll tell you more about those programs after we take some questions. So we've talked about why children lash out, what's going on in their brains and nervous systems. We've told you about three of our five tools, special time, play listening, and listening partnerships. And I'm sure we'll get a chance to talk a little bit more about the other two tools, stay listening and setting limits, when we take some questions. So let's see if we can help you apply these tools to some specific situations. We have about 20 minutes to answer a few questions. If you have a question, you can press star 2. You'll go into a queue, and we'll answer as many questions as you can. When you state your question, we're going to ask you to be as laser as possible. Like, you know, try to tell us the details in, you know, a few sentences if you can. And that'll give us more time with you and with other people who have questions. Great. So we have somebody from Palo Alto.
Yes. Hello. That's Ilana. My name is Ilana. And I am a grandmother, and I see my son struggling what to do with his son in some situations.
Yeah,
he's a very active toddler, but and he's not terribly aggressive, but it happens time and again. One example was when he was visiting the house of his cousin, who is a little, oh, by the way, he's about 20 months old.
Okay.
21 months old. So he was visiting his a little bit younger cousin, and they were playing around each other, and then in the end, he ran over across the room and pushed the little guy. So that's one type of behavior that was kind of out of the blue and came. And the other kind happens in like a music class that he goes to, which has parents and toddlers and babies and children do whatever the instructor tells them to do, singing, moving. And what happens in that class, he moves around. And he will pull the hair of somebody or do something like that. And my son, I think, doesn't know what to do because he doesn't want to be next to the baby all the time because he will be in the way of other people. So what does my son to do in both situations?
Great. Oh, great. So thank you, Ilana. It's a great question because I'm sure that situation happens for other people in those kinds of play and class situations. So going back to this idea that children lash out when they feel disconnected and unsafe. And that can happen in these kinds of, situations where their children are playing on their own. They don't have language yet. So, they use their bodies to try to communicate. So one of the things that your son can do is to give his son, you know, like 10 minutes of special time, before they go, to these kinds of events. Where there are, where just for maybe 7 minutes or 10 minutes, just follows his son's lead. You know, his son's not going to be able to verbally choose an activity at that point, but just really just gives his son love and attention, maybe does a little rough and tumble play so that his son feels connected and grounded before you go into these situations. And then the other idea is that, you know, there is this idea that at this very young age, children should be able to play on their own, and it's just not true that, you know, children need more support at that age. And so one of the things Patty suggests is that we be on kind of safety patrol, that rather than talking to the other adults in the room, that we really are right there within arm's reach of our child. So that
if they do start to go off track, that we can reach in and stop the off-track behavior with either putting our hand on their hand, setting that limit of, oh, sweetie, I can't let you take that toy, or, you know, coming in with a vigorous snuggle. Not seeing the child as bad or wrong, but seeing the child as disconnected and so offering some connection. And then the other thing I would say, in sort of social situations is I think it's really useful for parents to understand kind of like what the window of time is that a child can play on their own. And for this particular child, it may be like only 5 minutes that he can be on his own. Or if, you know, you say he'd been playing well for a while and then he flew across the room, like what, you know, were they packing up to go to say goodbye? Was it a transition? It's sort of like what's the pattern? And then the adult stepping in playfully and offering some connection at the end of that window. I mean, your son could be go so far as to like set his watch that at 4 minutes that beeps, and it's like, oh, at that point I'm going to get involved in the play and I'm going to provide some connection so that the children can play well together for another little chunk of time. And there's a great article on our website. The title is escaping me. But it starts with the word biting. I'll have our office put the link to that article. But it's really great in how it talks about, you know, what drives that kind of behavior in those kinds of social situations, and you know how to be on safety patrol. And then there's another article called Helping Children Play Well Together that's talking about if you're going into a social situation, like a conversation that you might have with the other adults, like, you know, how can we help our children play well together? Or what are your thoughts about sharing? So that the adults are setting the children up so that they can play well. Yeah? Does that make sense?
It does. Yep. When you were saying, I also thought that maybe a solution for my son when he pushed his cousin away is to do this, babies that push others away get 10,000 kisses.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So
that's a great idea. Thank you.
Because you cannot be there for you, it happens. It is, and that toddler is being actually with adults all the time. He does not play by himself much. So,
yeah.
Which is another thing. But in the class, yeah. I would think that maybe my son can go after where the baby is going and just be on his knees.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just be right there in the class with them.
Stand around.
Or sort of, you know. Yeah. So, great. Thank you, Alana. Thanks for that great question.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. And we have, it looks like Brianna from BC.
Yes, that's me. Hi, everybody. My question is regarding my son who's 18 months. And he often hits and is aggressive and screams. And I think a lot of it is because he doesn't have the words to express himself yet. You know, oftentimes it's resulting when he's frustrated and I'm like, you know, point to what you want. He does a lot of signing or like sign for what you want. And, you know, we don't do that or we're not understanding him and he will start hitting us if we pick him up or even get close to him or just start screaming. So how do you handle it in the interim when he doesn't have the words to express himself and a lot of the frustration and aggression is coming as a result of that?
Summer, you want to speak to that since you have younger kids?
Yeah. So, good question. And I know it's so hard because we as adults want to sort of come in with our adult brain and problem solve that. And
I had, actually my oldest son didn't speak at all until he was 3, and he signed a lot. And so there was, he had a lot of frustration around communication. And so what I struck upon that worked really well for us, and I continue to use it, this is where you offer the play listening, and you can step in with something playful. Because if he's being serious and you're being serious, like it's just kind of heading down the serious sort of path. And so I offer in that way to bring in like, mommy doesn't know what you want. And I just get kind of clownish, or I pretend like to be a puppy and I go and get, so for instance, my son would, you know, I would just start getting funny things out of the refrigerator. Like I couldn't figure out what he wanted. And so I would offer this sense of like, I'm trying really hard, but I'm not getting it right. And I would do, mommy's so silly. I would go get him ketchup and I would go get him, you know, all of these things. And I would bring that sense of laughter, or I would scoop him up and pretend he's an airplane. And I would, you know, fly him all over the room and be like, do you want the lamp? Do you want the toaster? And so instead of like, in that moment, there's something that's driving him and that he's really upset. So you can go that route. You could offer the play listening. And then the other option would be to offer the other tool, which is a stay listening tool, which is that you can offer this sense of like, I get it. Like, I get that it's so frustrating that there are times when I just like, I can't communicate what I want. I can't solve this problem. I really wanted to, you know, get this message across, and I totally messed it up. And so, like, in that same moment, there are times where maybe you can't be playful or the playful is not working, and that's where I just sit down with him, and I keep him safe, and I say, no, buddy, I can't let you hit me. And I might take his hand, and I put it on his tummy, or I scoop him up on my hand, and I just, like, listen with that gentle, like, empathy, like, gosh, I understand this is so frustrating for you, and I'm right here, and I'm going to listen to you, and you can cry about it as long as you want, but it's so frustrating. Because oftentimes we find that it's not actually about, you know, like, you cut my sandwich in, you know, triangles, and I wanted squares, and my kid just will just fall on the floor in puddles, or I really wanted that red cup, and the red cup's in the dishwasher, and can't have it, and they'll just fall apart. And oftentimes we find that those are actually pretexts to something else that's kind of bothering them. And so if I just sit down and offer and say, like, I don't know what you want right now, buddy. I'm so sorry. And I can't get that thing for you. And I just sit and listen. And he might rage and cry for 10, 15 minutes. Just, you know, and at this point, like, the rules are that we keep our body safe. So he's safe and I'm safe and we don't hurt things. That's essentially like kind of the only parameters that I hold. And if he wants to just cry and let it out, sometimes I'll go grab a pillow and I'll put it over me, and so like he can, you know, like I keep myself safe. We just sit, and it's this amazing kind of like, oh, and he just cries, and I just sit with him during that moment of anguish, and just, you know, it's hard. It's hard sometimes. We don't get what we want. Things are hard. And I'm just there with him in that moment. It's like, oh, he's done, and he gets up, and he's like, what red cup? I don't care. Whatever. You know, and he becomes flexible. And this ability to think clearly and problem solve, and sometimes then he'll even, you know, get his brain is back on board and the upset's done. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
And Brianna, I want to say too, you know, that I just want to reiterate one little thing that Summer said, which is that, you know, our adult brain's trying to problem solve, right? How can I help you get this word out, or how can I help you get what I want? But I think if we go for the connection, either through being playful or by staying and setting the limit, I can't let you hit me, and listening, is that then they, you know, when, as Summer said, you know, either through laughter or tears or, you know, raging, sweating, yawning, trembling, those are all ways that human beings offload tension. That once that tension's offloaded, you know, all those things that Summer is talking about, that flexibility, that, you know, and not that it won't happen again, because, you know, he's working on this project of, you know, this brain development project, this language acquisition project. He's working on it. So there are fits and starts, and there is huge frustration. And Patty has lots of great stories from her work in as a director of a child development center, of when children were listened to through that frustration rather than the adult trying to fix the problem, when they were just listened to, either listened to playfully or listened to, you know, their tears, that there are, that actually starts to be huge developmental leap, because there's all this, you know, like brain development happening that they're not, that's not being gunked up by the frustration, if that makes sense. And then the other thing I would say too is that, you know, whenever a child's working on a big project like this, whether it be a developmental project or an emotional project like separation or potty training or, a new sibling, it's really powerful to use all of all three tools together, including us getting listening time, in that you're offering special time at other times during the day. And then when the upset comes, when the frustration comes, then you're either offering stay listening or play listening. And then, as I said, we're getting the support we need to be able to be flexible around their, what they're working through, and not get upset by it or worried by it or try to fix it. Yeah?
Yeah. Okay.
Great. Great. Thank you. Great question. You're fiddling with my dashboard here. So, looks like Leah from San Francisco.
Yes. Hi. Hold on. Let me get to my private place that's not by the children who are playing. So, yeah, thanks. So the brief background on us is, I wrote this out bold so I could be brief. So my girl is just about six. Her traumas were she came out 2 months premature. And when she was about three, she watched her dad have a really serious heart malfunction. We had two EMT crews. She was in his arms alone when his defibrillator went off, and he screamed and jolted back, and she thought it was because of her. And we all thought he was going to die. And so what's come up out of it, that I wanted to ask about, you know, 2 years later, she told me that she thought that he did all this because he didn't want her in his arms, and periodically it comes back up. You know, generally she can be really compassionate, very patient. It's becoming increasingly difficult for her to deal with things when it doesn't go her way. The biggest, the smallest ways is she's constantly interrupting and needing attention. The biggest ways, and it's happening at school and here, is the way she will yell. She's in class. They're walking out to gardening class in kindergarten last year. One of her friends was going really slowly, and she wanted to help the group continue to move on as they with the teacher. So she went around her friend. Her friend starts saying, "Hey, you're cutting," and she melts down screaming and yelling at them, "No, I'm not. No, I'm not." So the question is going to be, you know, this isn't necessarily hitting, although last week she was on a rocker with a friend who wouldn't get off, and she actually bit her friend, which she's never done before. When we're in a situation, she's there with another friend who's about five or six. It's not going the way she wants. She starts to yell and scream at them because she can't deal with the frustration. What do I do?
Great question. So, so it's not, so the off-track behavior is not just showing up as hitting, but it's showing off in a lot of different ways, just a whole range of kind of inflexibility and upset. So Leah, you do have on your hands a big, huge emotional project. And so the first thing is going to be for you to get listening time. And, if you contact me on the website, I can direct you how you can find a listening partner. Because I'm sure that event was traumatic for you as well. And so every time she gets upset, it's a reminder of what happened for everyone. So if you're getting listening time, then you're going to be able to see every time. So it's literally like you could think of it like if she got, food poisoning. Right? And we know that when there's something upsetting in our stomach that's not good for our body's natural reaction is to puke. Sorry, I'm being a little graphic here. But, you know, so looking at, like, every time she gets upset, that's like her body trying to get that fear out. It's like that feet, she's bumped up against a no or something, you know, something that's not going her way, as you said. And so that what happens is that her whole nervous system goes into that state of panic of, you know, I'm all alone, I might not make it, or, you know, this may never end. But the way you're seeing it is like you're seeing the throw up. So just like, you know, when our kid is sick, we're able to come in and just put our hand on their back. We don't, you know, we're not looking at, like, what are the strategies to make them not throw up anymore? Or if you think of it like an emotional poop, or, you know, our kids have to pee and poo to get, we all human beings do, to get the garbage out of our system. You know, so we don't come up with strategies to how to not make that happen. We look at it like, oh, yeah, I need to do this. My body needs to do this. Well, the same is true for her. So just as I was saying to the previous, about the previous question, the best way to work on this is to help her is to really start increasing her safety and connection through special time, through doing regular special time. When you do special time and you create that emotional safety, you may see that when the timer goes off that she has a huge upset. And so what I recommend when people are working on an emotional project and there's a huge upset, I mean, there might be a huge upset, that you plan just for a short amount of special time, maybe 5 minutes, and you've left another 20, 25, 35 minutes to listen to their feelings. The more you listen to her upset, and even, you know, So the upset itself, because the upset is the release of the fear, it may not decrease in intensity, but what you can start to look for as you're doing special time and listening to her feelings and, is that you'll see more flexibility in between the tantrums. Yeah? And so doing special time, particularly doing special time before she goes on any kind of a outing where she's not going to be with you, whether she's going to be with other kids, whenever you are with her in these social situations and you see that she starts to get upset, coming in and either setting a limit and listening to her feelings, or coming in and being playful with the vigorous snuggle, with lots of, with 1,000 kisses. And over time, because you're both increasing the connection, increasing the emotional safety, and letting her have a release of the feelings, over time, you will see the upset start to diminish. But the first thing it's going to require is that you get support. So
yeah,
we can talk more about this in a minute, Leah, but we're at the top of the hour. So what I need to do is I need to end the call for the recording. We need to do our little commercial here at the end. And then Summer and I are going to stay on the line for about another 30 minutes because there's four more people after you that have questions. So just for right now, I'm going to put you back on mute, and we're going to end the call for the sake of the recording, but we're going to stay on the line. Yeah? Okay. So, great. So our hour is up, unfortunately, and we're going to, as I said, we're going to end the call for the sake of the recording. So after we do this little, our little bit here at the end, I'm going to take a few second pause, and then we're going to stay on the line for about another 30 minutes to answer a few more questions. If you didn't get your question answered today, or you don't get it answered in the next 30 minutes, we hope that you'll join our Yahoo Hand in Hand discussion group.
It's called Hand in Hand Discuss, and there's two instructors there, Rachel and Michelle, and they are available to answer your questions in great detail. Summer, it's been really wonderful being on this call with you. Your family's clearly thriving because of your use of the tools, and thank you so much for sharing some of your experiences with us. Your connection to, your commitment to connecting with your children is really inspiring. So thank you. It's just been an honor to have you on the call.
Thank you, Kathy. It's been amazing to be here, and I'd like to thank the parents that also called in today, and I just love that we are all here as a community to support each other. And thank you, Kathy, for being such a beautiful advocate and voice for all of us and offering your wisdom.
Thanks, Summer. And we do hope that we've given you some ideas that can help you help your kiddos. We know this is just an hour call and that these wonderful tools take practice. And it, most importantly, it takes you being supported. And we'd love to continue to work with you and support you. So you can connect with me through the Hand in Hand website or my Facebook page, Parenting by Connection with Kathy Gordon. That's Kathy with a K, and it's G-O-R-D-O-N. And our fall schedule of classes has been posted. I'm offering a 6-week online Parenting by Connection tool starter class. It's going to be on Tuesdays at 11:30 a.m. Pacific, which is 7:30 p.m. in the UK, and it'll start Tuesday, September 13th. And I'm also leading the 10-week parent intensive, and that's going to be on Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. Pacific. That class starts on Thursday, September 29th. If you're listening to this call and you're interested in the parent intensive, you can get $50 off the tuition, and you'll find the link to that discount in the replay email. And we have a lot of free resources. I mentioned our Yahoo discussion group, and every month there are at least two free teleseminars like this one. On August 9th, Michelle Carlson and Keiko Sato-Perry will be talking about back to school, getting you and your child prepared to learn. And then on August 23rd, which is the official release date for the hand-in-hand book, Listen, our co-authors, Patty Whiffler and Tasha Shore, are going to be available to take all your questions about using our 5 simple tools to meet your parenting challenges. Earlier I mentioned we now offer self-paced, self-guided video classes, and these video classes help you apply the Parenting by Connection tools to a specific situation or emotional project that you might be working through, like sleep, aggression, sibling, rivalry, separation. There's even one on listening partnerships that's very powerful. If you'd like access to all those self-guided videos, you could actually join our membership program, Hand in Hand Parenting Club. For a small monthly fee, every Monday, you get a short instructional video that's taken from one of those self-guided video classes, and it shows up in your inbox, and then you get a link to some anecdotes that that really give you some step-by-step solutions for implementing the tools. And you also get at least 2 live coaching calls every month with instructors like myself. For more information about these resources and more, you can subscribe to our monthly newsletter and go on our website. There you'll find a schedule of classes along with articles and success stories on just about any subject you want, from weaning to homework to hitting. And again, our website is handinhandparenting.org. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization. We depend on your donations to provide free services like this parenting call, our free parent discussion group, and scholarships for classes and instructor training. And it's easy to donate. Any amount helps. You can just click on the donate button on the website and give whatever you can. And together, we can support parents everywhere. And with that, we'll wrap up the call. Thank you for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed the teleseminar. It's been wonderful to have you here with us. We really appreciate your commitment to your families and the time it took for you to be here. We hope you'll keep in touch and let us know how it's going. Okay. Great. So, is Leah still here? Or I guess she must have had to get off. Okay, so this looks like Mark from San Jose.
Hello, Mark.
Mark, are you? Huh. Okay. Well, okay. So, Susanna.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hello? Yeah. Hi. Susanna.
Yeah,
I can hear you.
Connected. I've got a 6.5-year-old boy, and I'm fairly new to the hand-in-hand approach. I've only just started exploring it, and I've just completed the Brave Deep Setting Limits course. My question is relating to little aggressive outbursts when they are happening in public. I can understand it a lot better now, where it's coming from. Just as an example, ready to go into school. He needs to take in his coat, doesn't want to, and just gives me a kick immediately before having to go in. And I find it really embarrassing, and I'm not entirely sure what the best way to deal with it in this situation, because I can't go in with a vigorous snuggle or play listening, or there's no time.
Right.
And so far what I've done is just given a quick cuddle. But I'm feeling very very exposed, you know, in a row with mothers and everybody going in. And I just thought, what do I do in that particular situation? Is this something that will get better in the course of having more time? Or I think I'm having a bit of an impatient feeling towards it.
So as we talked about, that's a great thing to share with a listening partner, so that you can explore the impatience. And I know for myself, when that would happen in public situations, it was the embarrassment and what are people thinking about me, and you know, that those sorts of feelings that would come up and really cloud my thinking. So that I wasn't able to, so that I wasn't able to be present and see that kind of lashing out for what I think it is. I know with my son, that kind of lashing out that would happen in transitions is that that fear of you're leaving me, or, you know, I'm scared. I'm signaling you that I'm scared. So one of the, great things you can do is to, oh, I think we lost her. So, but, it, oh, there she is. No, Susanna's there. Okay. One of the great things that you can do, Susanna. I just have you muted because there's some feedback here. I'll give you this little piece and then I'll unmute you.
Okay.
So, one of the great things you can do is try offering a little bit of connection, either through special time or even through some play listening, before you go to school. So that's what I did with my son in the morning. I would do like 10 minutes of, you know, special time, and he always asked for wrestling. And that so that he was, because what you're dealing with is a little bit of separation anxiety. And so offering some connection, or even, you know, you get to school and before he gets in line, or before you go in the door, you know, maybe you chase him around the yard a little bit, or you hold on to him and you play this game. You often go the opposite direction. So if what he's feeling is a sense of fear around separation, you know, maybe you hold on to him and you say, no, I can't let you leave. I can't let you leave. And you're stuck. You play the stuck game, you know. Or you do something where you say, hey, we're going to, you know, there's lots of great stories that parents have written about on the website about separation, where you say, you know, you walk towards school and then you say, oh, you know, maybe we, I don't know if we're going to go to school today, and then you run away. And then you say, oh, no, okay, let's go, and then you run away. But whatever you can do to bring connection and get the giggles going, I think you'll see a reduction in that kind of, you know, that quick lashing out that says, like, I'm scared, I don't want you to leave.
I think what I find difficult is to anticipate it, because everything seems to be going fine, and then suddenly it's almost like the moment of going in or the moment of leaving the house, something quickly flares up, and I start to understand it a lot better, why this might be happening, other feeling suddenly comes in, oh, I actually don't want to go to school, or I don't want to go out of the house, or I just, something comes up, but it's just, I find it difficult to anticipate that, but I'm guessing with time that'll probably get better.
Yeah, well, you know, but now you see that it's a pattern. Right? You see that it's a pattern, so you just put the special time and the play listening in. You know, like, that's why we call it the connection vitamin. Like, we don't wait until our kid gets the flu to, I mean, sometimes it happens, but, you know, it's like flu season. So we do the preventative care. We give them the vitamins. We, you know, make sure they get more sleep. Whatever your protocol or your thinking is around wellness, when it's flu season, we do those things. You know, we don't wait until they get sick. We try not to. Sometimes it catches us by surprise. But that's why we – go ahead, Summer. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, I had another – so as Kathy was saying – sorry, Kathy, I didn't mean to –
No.
We're done. Was that the other idea, so like Kathy's talking about how this preventative things that you can do kind of beforehand to steer off all of that, which is – really the best approach is to sort of, you know, kind of front load all of that. And in the moment, I find that it's really hard for me because I feel, like you said, I feel embarrassed. I feel like people are judging me. I feel like there's a certain parenting response that people are expecting for me to have that I need to, like, in that moment, people are watching and like, are you going to do it right? You know, like, how are you going to handle this? And so I feel like, this is where the listening partnership that she's talking about, like unloading all of my own kind of ego stuff and like trying to remove like, what am I supposed to do? What does society say that I should, how should I react? And really finding what works with just my son and I, or my daughter and I. And in that moment, just finding like taking that moment to kind of, not that moment, but previously, like figure out, really feel what feels good for me. And what I do in that moment is I treat it really lightly. And so, like, we're getting in the car, and the kid whacks me in the face, and my friend's standing right there, or reaches out and scratches me, or just something like, clearly, I've been on a play date, I've been talking with the mom the whole time, the kid doesn't want to leave, so he lashes out and scratches me. And what I do in that moment is I remember, like, this is not who my kid is. My kid loves me. This is a reaction. And I say, I go, uh-oh, you just kicked me. Ouch, that really hurt. Come here, little Bellas. You know, little boys who kick get 10,000 kisses. And that's the response that has worked really well for me in that situation, is that when I'm in public and my kid does something, I treat it not lightly, like it doesn't matter, but I feel in that moment it is always the best to offer that connection, to scoop in and to be like, uh-oh. And that has always been the best response, is that like, oh, shoot, like, oh, darn, that just happened. That wasn't supposed to happen. That's not who you are. That's not how we act. That's not how we say goodbye. Come here, Bubba. Like, give me a kiss. That's, you know, we give hugs when we leave. We don't kick each other when we leave. And that has been the best for me to, like, regroup, to rehold him, to reconnect in that moment, and to make him feel like he's not a bad person, that I don't have to sit there and give a lecture, that I don't need to, like, send him to the car or whatever. That's what I've found to be the best tool.
Yeah, it's great. It's great, Summer. And what I really love about that is that, I mean, just very practically thinking that, you know, here our child is about to go off to school and they've just signaled, help, help. And, you know, and they're going to have to go into a situation where they're going to have to maintain that we want them to be able to have access to their best thinking so that they can learn, so they can stay engaged. And so how we react is what's going to determine whether they're going into that situation feeling worse about themselves or feeling more safe and connected. And what's so great about what you were, the reaction and the strategy that you're talking about is that child moves forward in life feeling safe and connected. And Susanna, I think we gave you some before the moment, how to front load, and you know what to do in the moment to help him go into that school situation feeling good about himself as opposed to feeling scared and I mean, one of the problems about all of the traditional ways of dealing with aggression, you know, like of reprimanding or chastising or punishment, is that, you know, the kid is already scared. That's how come the behavior happens. And now we come in with a heavy-handed, with a punishment. So now we're adding more bad feeling on top of that fear. So that's why I think what Summer suggests is really brilliant.
I really like that suggestion. Thank you very much. And so far, I've more taken the approach of ignoring it, which doesn't actually help, I think, because he wants some kind of response. And I think that approach that you've just described, and also before in the call with the 10,000 kisses, I really think that's a very, very clever approach. So thanks for that.
Great.
You're welcome. Good thinking.
Let me just make sure I mute Susanna because there we go. Good. There's something about the line that there's a echo. Okay. Mandy, you have been waiting so patiently.
Hi.
Hi,
thank you so much. This has been really helpful. And Summer, I do have to tell you, thanks so much for your honesty. It kind of helps me, makes me feel better. And so right now what's going on with my 3-year-old little boy, he does have some sensory differences that we do try to account for. And he has been having some struggles at bedtime. He has gone from a kid with no problem. He gets into bed and falls right asleep to now a complete disaster. Even though we go through his set routine, everything is fine. He seems to be calm and ready for bed until the lights are turned out. And he completely loses it. And he becomes aggressive and screams, and he really just can't calm down. So really my struggle here and my question is what can I do to kind of reset him in that moment? Now I've tried to give him those tight squeezes and hugs, and that doesn't help. He says, you're hurting me. And it's almost kind of like he's not there. So it's really, I just need some help in figuring out kind of how to kind of reset that button in order for us to kind of get on with bedtime and then,
And what's the, I'm sorry, so say a little bit more about your bedtime routine.
So what we do is we come upstairs, we put our pajamas on, we brush our teeth, we do some therapy brushing, if you're familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
We do a little bit of, we do a little swinging and a Lycra swing because he likes that. Mm-hmm. And then we get into bed and we read about 2 to 3 books. And like I said, he's just very calm and he seems like he's going to be ready for bed. But then it's just like lights out and he's done. He turns into a whole different person.
Summer, I'm guessing you have some great ideas too, and I'll start, because our bedtime was similar to that,
mm-hmm.
in the kind of the routine of it. And one of the things that goes to my beginning, I was talking about my consultation with Patty. You know, one of the things Patty pointed out to me was that I had this lovely routine, but there wasn't a lot of connection in the sense of my son, of me taking the less powerful role. And my son, you know, it was a routine rather than being kind of like that yummy playfulness, right?
Okay.
So one of the things, and you may not have this, but one of the things I just very practically is that I moved reading to dinner time. Now it's just my son and I. But I'm somebody who has a very difficult time closing a book. Like I'll read all night long, right? So I had some empathy and practicality around that transition. And so I just moved reading, like the ending of a book, like my son wanted one more book and one more book and one more book. And the ending of the book was just too big of a transition. So I moved reading to dinner time. And what we did right before there was lights out was that we, I'll back up, that we made our bedtime. I think we can do this pretty easily with what you're already doing in your routine, but we made our bedtime really like very playful, very silly. It was piggyback rides to the, to the tub. It was, rubbing, me singing and rubbing, drying him off, getting out of the tub. It was, brushing teeth games. It was, it was anything that I could do where I was silly and get the laughter going, because that laughter is the offloading of fear. In addition to being really connecting, it's the offloading of fear. So then it was piggyback rides back to the bed. Then we'd have a big old pillow fight for about 2 or 3 minutes where, of course, I would take the less powerful role. He would pummel me. And then, I'd say, okay, sweetie, lights, it's time for lights out. I'd put on the music, just very practically, my son's 12, just in the last few months, he's been sleeping around a nightlight. Up until this point, we've always had a nightlight.
I'm so nervous to do that little bit, only because I'm just so afraid that I'm going to get him more excited and then he's not going to be able to calm down.
Then we put on the music and he crawled up into my arms, and I actually did lay with him until he kind of fell asleep in my arms. So what can I do to provide connection, to provide safety, and throughout the whole bedtime routine of having there be lots of laughter and lots of where he's in the more powerful role. He's brushing my teeth and, I'm brushing his ear and I'm threatening to brush his toes and, and you already have some sensory things that you have to do. So is there ways to make games out of those where there's laughter happening, and then, doing all that, I will tell you that when my son had a big chunk of something to work on, like the day that Joey ruined his birthday party, that night, even though we did all that wonderful routine, when I put on the music and turned off the lights, it was just a night light, he still threw himself around on the ground, on the bed, and cried for 45 minutes. But I knew that he had that whole disappointment of not having the birthday party that you wanted, or planning this whole birthday party and then having the kid come and say, no, I don't want to do that, and that's how I would do this. It gave him the limit of lights out gave him the opportunity to work on those feelings. And then I stay listen. I'm not saying that doing this lovely bedtime routine will have your son go, okay, mommy, because think of it, like lights out is the end of connection and play. And it's like, you can imagine what's happening in their nervous system. It's like, you're leaving me all alone here in the dark. I might die. Are you kidding me? I'm going to do everything possible I can do to so that you don't leave me alone here in the dark. Mm-hmm. So you know it's safe. but no amount of like talking about it or reading books about, you know, there's really no monsters under the bed or whatever. Because it's a nervous system thing. It's the nervous system that goes haywire and puts it, you know, it's like, again, going back to the analogy of the drowning person. It's like you're trying to, you know, you're trying to carry them in, but they're fighting you every step of the way because they're in such a state of panic. It's like your son is in a state of panic, and so you can work it. You work it from several different directions, which is that you give him special time during the day, which helps him feel more safe. You do play lots of connected play where he has a more powerful role at night, so that there's laughter offloading the tension. And then you may, you may still have to stay with him even with the nightlight. The crying is actually healing the fears. It's the offloading of the fear, the crying. And that's a good thing. That's a really good thing. The more big, hard cries that he has, the more fear that he's getting up and out of his emotional backpack. Hang on one second, because one other thing you can do is that you could find times during the day to set little limits that don't have anything to do with bedtime that would give him an opportunity to have a pretext to have a cry. Like Summer was saying, about sometimes it's like they seem to get upset about we haven't cut their sandwich just right, or he asks for the blue cup and you give him the red cup and he asks for the blue cup, and normally you would just swap the cups out, it's like no big deal. But you decide, because you have the capacity to listen to his tantrum, that you're going to just set this little limit and say, sweetie, we're not going to use the blue cup today. We're going to use the red cup. And that tantrum is actually offloading some of the fear that he's been saving up for bedtime. So that's another way of approaching it. So, yes, okay. You were going to...
Yeah, well, you had mentioned about, the good hard cry and allowing him, and we've certainly done that with him. It's just that bedtime, it's not that he cries, he just becomes aggressive and runs all over the room and kind of screams, and is just more out of control than emotionally upset.
Yeah. So something that I have found also during the day, so in that moment, is that I actually kind of build up a little model, and that's been really helpful. So I will construct when I've kind of done my listening time, I'm in a good clear space, I've got something else for the other kids to do, and I'll say, hey, North, why don't we, so my oldest son was locked in the car seat for a while, he got trapped in the car for a while, long story, but anyway, so he would have a lot of fear around that, and anytime we had to go in the car, he would just start acting out, and just really getting unmanageable. I mean, we would just say, hey, you want to go to the zoo, and he would just like, yes, I want to go to the zoo, but I don't want to get in the car. Like that kind of, he would just really start to lose it. So what I would start to do is I would pretend that the couch was the car seat. So I would maybe recommend starting like a bedtime routine, but where you're playing bedtime. And so you get to be the baby or you get to be the little boy and you get laughter going around this bedtime routine that's really stressful for him. And you get to laugh about it, not in the moment, not when it's actually like crunch time and like your feelings are high and you're like, oh, I just go to bed, and he's like, oh, don't leave me. Like, you get to kind of recreate all that emotionness, but in a safe place. So we would start where I would be in the car seat, and I'd be like, let me out, and he would say, no, you can't get out, and, that kind of thing. So in the same way, but maybe recreate that about bedtime. So, like, where you're the little kid, and you're like, Mommy, come back, and he can say, no, I'm not going to get back. And you'd be like, please, I want a drink of water, I want a toothbrush, I want a pony, I want an elephant, like all of those things. And you get all of those, that laughter going, that kind of diffuses that situation that's so critical in that moment and brings like a lightness to it. And he kind of gets to work out some of those things that feel really heavy in that moment. So you guys can laugh about it and kind of look at it in the light, essentially, during the day. And then that kind of brings a sense of safety to it, and you kind of like, essentially, you're having a conversation with him about it without having to, like, sit down and be like, now, son, let's talk about bedtime. You're having a conversation about how difficult that is for both of you. and that's hard for you, mm-hmm. and it's hard for him, and you get to have, like, a kid conversation about it. And then the other thing that I would recommend, and I had to do this with my boys, so there was a period of time where my husband was working really late for months and months and end, and so they would never see him at bedtime. So bedtime got really crazy and out of control as well. And during that time, I just was like, whatever, screw it. Everyone's sleeping in my bed. And I just needed to survive. Like, I just needed to
right.
sleep. And so forget the whole, like, everyone needs to sleep in their rooms. Like, it just, we tried everything. And I just was like, right now for our family, this is what works. And we just would all pile into my bed, and I literally would have one of them sleep between my legs because I have three, so I don't have enough thighs. So I'd have, like, one, you know, at the bottom of the bed, one on either side, and everyone would fall asleep. And then when Daddy came back and we had room and space to, like, kind of emotionally deal with that, then it was like, okay, now you're going to have feelings, but sleep back in your own room, and that this was going to be hard. But I was in a place where I could listen to that. And so we would start with, like, a lot of closeness, like, but I would offer, like, the sense of safety, like, mommy loves you, mommy's here, we're right here. And then I would just say a little bit, like, I'm going to go now. I'm going to go. And I wouldn't actually leave. I would just say, I'm going to leave now. And I would watch what came up. So they would start to cry, no, don't go, no, don't go, go. And I would stay physically, but I would present the idea of me leaving. I'm going to go. I'm tonight you're going to sleep in your bed. Maybe tomorrow night you can sleep in my bed again, but tonight you're going to sleep in your bed. And he would cry and cry, no, don't go, don't go. And I would physically stay, so that way I'm offering my presence and my safety and that ability to listen to him. But then I would just move. I mean, like, I would wait until that kind of, like, offloaded, and then I could move a little bit farther the next night and the next night and the next night. And so literally, like, now my 8-year-old's like, okay, Mom, good night, and can go to bed by myself. So does that kind of – that's another
– Yeah, no,
another
some great suggestions. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I like the idea of being light and having fun and making it fun, taking the routine out of the routine of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Summer.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know, but my phone just disconnected.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I'm glad. That's why we have two people on these calls, in case anything funky happens. So, great. Let's see. We're actually at the end of our 30 minutes, but let's see. We have one more call here. Let's see if we could quickly from Boston.
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
How you doing? Thank you for offering up all this wonderful information. I have three kids, a 6-week-old, 2-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And we've been doing hand-in-hand in our household for about 2 to 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is about our 4-year-old who, you know, whenever there's a transition, whether it's turning off the television, leaving a particular place, or stopping to do something, he, you know, obviously has some difficulty with that. And I would call the tantrum, and, you know, I was listening to sort of the lashing out to see if it was lashing out. I'm not quite sure, you know, what it is, but when I hear you talk about his sort of need and his fears and the sort of the science part of it, I'm wondering, in this instance, when it's not like a fight or flight mode, but we're just changing things, is he having those feelings that you described, and is it the same approach, or is it just a different set of parameters that he's going through, and, you know, what would be the sort of approach at that point?
So you're asking if – wait, so say it again, because I'm clear on your question.
Sure. So our 4-year-old.
I heard about she's having difficulty at transition.
Yeah.
So if you're wondering if that fear that's driving it, or if we would recommend the same approach as we've been talking about with.
Let me quickly rephrase, and maybe it'll be
okay,
a little more clear.
Okay. Thanks.
So when he has these
no, it's me. I miss it. You were fine.
No problem.
I miss it.
Not a problem. When he's having these episodes and he's sort of lashing out, the way you described his internal kind of thought process is he's feeling threatened, he's feeling scared, he's unsure what's next, right?
Right.
But these are everyday things that we do. We always stop TV to eat dinner. We always, you know, put the book down to go to bed. And so, you know, I don't know whether there are feelings that he's having that are like fight or flight, but there's still some feelings. So,
yeah.
So I'm wondering what he's going through in those modes at that time and what it is we could sort of do.
Right. Great, great question, because transitions are difficult for many children. I mean, they're difficult for us as adults, you know, like, you know, I'm always trying to get one more thing done before I get out of the house, right? Or if somebody interrupts me when I'm in the middle of doing something, it's like, wait, no, stop. I can't, you know, so transitions are challenging for all of us as human beings. And the thing I think to keep in mind and is that there is this idea that children should get used to a routine, right? So I had this idea about bedtime. You know, before I had this consultation with Patty, it was so frustrating for me because I was like, Bud, like we do the same thing every night, you know? It's bath, teeth, two books, lights out, like get with the program. You know, so I couldn't understand why, you know, why something that I thought he should be comfortable with was, you know, caused an upset every single night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about a and we have this kind of adult idea, like, well, yeah, it's the end of TV, but it's the beginning of this other thing. Like, I would even say that to my 3-year-old, you know? Like, but yeah, yes, it's the end of TV, but it's the beginning of this.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. that's like a prefrontal cortex adult concept, you know? So, it's like how many of us are okay with the end of a party when we're having a really good time? So I think that just seeing that that their nervous system doesn't understand, like, oh, this is the beginning of whatever, you know. It's just like this is the end. It's the end, and it can feel I don't really know why. I mean, my own kids, I surmise from my own child's experience that why for him is because his very first transition coming into the world was one of his not getting that first bonding. So it was almost as if his birth mother had died. She didn't. But because he didn't, so his nervous system or his whole, you know, brain neurology experienced that like a death, like she wasn't there. So I've always surmised that that's why transitions have been so difficult for my son, because he comes up against that no, and his nervous system experiences it like, I'm going to die, right? So I think it's the best thing to do with transitions is, one, okay, you see the pattern, right? So is coming in playfully and playing through the transition of, is one way to handle it. You know, mm-hmm. That's how what I started doing with my son was like piggybacks, wild rides everywhere, like providing that connection and just playing through the transition. You know, you turn the television off and you throw yourself down on the ground and you say, oh, no, 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 television, you know. So again, play listening, great way thing to do with play listening is you go in the opposite direction of the way, like you're dramatizing the you know, quote unquote negative behavior. The other thing to do is to see that they're using the pretext as an opportunity to offload whatever little chunk of tension is stuck in there and making them not be able to move through the transition. Mm-hmm. And then the one other thing I would say is the big picture of this is to be doing regular special time so that
that our, you know, that our kids in general just have more resiliency. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Summer, anything you want to add to that about transitions?
Yeah. So, I don't know if you, so in earlier when I was talking about, my son and the bad dream. So I think the big key is not so much that in that moment that you turn the TV off that he's like feeling the sense of like flight or fight or that his body, but essentially his ability to, his threshold, and I really love that word, his threshold for being able to like be flexible and deal with things is so, his body is so tense or his nervous system is so on edge that he's not able to be like, oh, clearly I see that we are transitioning from TV into this other thing. He's just reactionary. And, I mean, I experienced that, too. I haven't had enough sleep. There's, you know, I don't have any money. And all of a sudden, my threshold for dealing with little things is completely out the window. And I just am, like, on edge. And so, essentially, scared children, and we don't even need to know why or what it was. Like, in the moment that I, you know, that Everett was, you know, his brother took his game piece or he lost and he flips the board over or whatever. Like, we don't need to know necessarily what it was that scared him. That came out later. But the first response was to connect in that moment and to be, buddy, that's not how we act. Do you need some help? Like, how can I help you? I see that you're having a hard time transitioning. I see that you know, you're not putting your shoes on and it's time to get our shoes on and you're, you know, throwing them across the floor. That's, you know, and that sense of drawing near and like, how can I help? What's going on? And offering a limit if you need to, or offering some play listening, some fun, like, our shoes don't fly. My shoes fly. Let's see. Throwing them or, you know, whatever it is, but that sense of like, clearly your threshold is not what it should be right now. And so through special time, through play listening, through connection, and then off, like she said earlier about offering a limit, like setting a limit and letting him offload those feelings, you'll see that threshold increase. And that's exactly like what happened. You know, I took Everett in the other room. We went and played. He had a big cry about the scary bad dream. And then his threshold was increased. And he was like able to play with his brother again. And we were able to sit down and have dinner. And so kind of beginning to see that pattern that, you know, it isn't necessarily that aggression is from something that scared him. And it could have been that he watched something on TV or he had a thought that scared him or, you know, it could be anything. I have a high anxiety child who just tends to absorb anxiety. And so I can't even always know what it is that causes some of that, but it's just, I'm here. It's going to be okay. And, you know, gotcha. If you need to offload, you offload and we'll keep going.
Yeah.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Great. And I just say one other thing too, you know, remember I talked earlier about co-regulating. So, you know, Sheldon is, I mean, Summer is giving you a really, like, you can hear in her words, like, how calm she is as she's coming in. And again, this takes us getting support through listening time. How calm Summer is coming in and saying, hey, you know, I'm right here. How can I help? And just us being calm, I know. You know, when my son would have trouble with transitions and I get frustrated, that would just add to his anxiety. That now we're both ramped up, you know, and it's been a learning challenge, you know, journey for me because I'm the person who's always late. So I'm rushing around. It's my own anxiety going, come on, we gotta go. And I really had to learn to like, okay, well, I'm not going to get that done because I'm going to leave an extra, you know, 10 minutes to help you through this transition. We're going to start for school 30 minutes early so that you can have the feelings you need to have or we can do the play that we need to play in order to help you through this transition. Yeah? So we have gone way, way, way over, and I apologize to those people who didn't get their questions answered. Again, I encourage you, you can contact me through the website. Summer, can they contact you through the Yahoo group? If they have a question, you can answer a question on the Yahoo group, and mm-hmm. Summer will soon be a certified instructor in Oregon, in Portland. If you're in that area, you can look forward to connecting with her there. Really, really so grateful for everybody who stayed on. You know, you've been on now almost 2 hours, and so I know I need to get back to my son, and so thank you all so much for being here. Summer, thank you for your wisdom, your experience, your courage, and your humor. And we will connect with you all either on the Yahoo group or the website. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Kathy. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you, Summer.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.